Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
First up, let's take a look at the business stories making this morning's papers. I'm delighted to be joined by Caroline Reedy of the HR Suite and also of John Isle, the Deputy Business Editor with the Sunday Times in Ireland. You're both very welcome to the programme. And I note that both my guests are wearing scarves. So it's bloody cold out there and our guests reflect the temperature that's out there. So thank you for coming adornedly clothed to the paper review. John, I'll start with you maybe. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but the 1 in 7 bottle return machines out of order. Some teething problems for this scheme. It seems to be good in principle, but like all these things, it's hitting a few speed bumps.
Yeah, and you know, you don't want to judge these sort of these new programs too early, but I have to say that this return scheme kind of came along as a surprise to everybody. It was just kind of launched without any long communications campaign leading ahead of it. I think a lot of retailers weren't really ready for it, and the teething problems were all completely foreseeable. So one, I think it's too complex, right? So you have to put your bottles into this machine, and instead of actually getting coins or notes back, you get a receipt, which you then have to take to a till, to blah, blah, all of this kind of stuff. So there are all kinds of barriers.
Stuff goes wrong.
All kinds of barriers to using it. First of all, it's just a lot of friction. But on the retailer side, it's been fascinating to watch how it was rolled out. So like the big retailers like Lidl or Dunn Stores or whatever, they cleared out space in their shops to put these big machines in, but it was unclear for a while what the smaller retailers were supposed to be. So if you're under a threshold, like what are you supposed to do when somebody returns a bottle to you? Do you have to store it and then go return them all yourself to get the money back? How do you charge? Does the wholesaler put the 15 cents on the payment for you? Do you pass on it to the customer? None of that was really clear. And so there's like a lot of resistance to it from all quarters because of the friction and the poor communication. And I think that's mostly what has affected the rollout today.
I think that's a really good analysis. Simplicity is your friend. Caroline, John has articulated very well there that this was too complicated and badly communicated, hence these problems.
I suppose that's fair to say. I mean, I wouldn't disagree. But I suppose when we think back, the bag levy is in place 23 years at this stage. And now we all, you know, admonish ourselves when we forget our bags because we have to pay extra for them.
Yeah.
And you just get into the habit. And I think that has proven that this is about changing habits too. Like if we think about it at the moment, 2 million containers were returned in February, 20 million in March, and it's anticipated there'll be 50 million in April. And even though there are teething problems of getting them working smoothly, and that is goes without saying, when they were going into the green bins, most of them ended up in incinerators.
Which is almost criminal. When you think if you go to put something in a green bin, you think, this is going to, I'm doing the right thing here.
But absolutely.
When you hear that it goes to landfill or goes
it's a mortal sin.
That it shouldn't do, it's a real disincentive.
Absolutely, absolutely. And like, I think everybody was good at using the green bins. But ultimately, I suppose, if they are ending up in incinerators, it's not doing what it's supposed to. And I suppose the European average at the moment is 95% operational. We're currently at 86%. So we're getting there.
Which isn't considering that bad.
Not bad. No.
I'd also like, just to echo on John's point, I was in a very small retailer in Ballinasloe, an off-license, where the machine was right beside almost the cash register. And the owner or operator of the business was right beside the machine to help people through those friction points that you do. And she said it was working very well for them. But I think where a machine is just put out there and people are meant to work out. People leave things beside it and where it's unsupervised.
Yeah, I think as well they're full in a lot of places where I've experienced the issue. It's the fact the machines are full.
Yeah.
So again, I think it's getting operationally savvy at what's required does take us a bit of time. So hopefully we will see that rate increase to the 95% average because the frustration around them otherwise will just deter people and that's what we don't want.
Yeah. John, it's all over today's papers, and I hope it's good news for the consumer. I think it will be. Spain's Bankinter plans to enter the Irish banking market with an online service. Now, They are here trading as Avant Money up there in Carrick and Shannon, as I understand it, at the moment. But they're going to offer consumers a whole new range of products.
Well, it's unclear exactly what they're going to be offering, right? So I'm going to be a little cranky about this story because I think it's been slightly oversold in the Irish Times today.
Okay.
So Bank Inter is already in the Irish market, right? They're very active in the mortgage market through Avant Money. I think they've lent $2.5 billion or $3 billion worth of mortgages. Now, those mortgages, it's important to know, they're not across the spectrum of mortgages. They've done a lot of cherry picking in that market. They've taken the best customers with the lowest loan to value, and they can compete very well on rates, right? So it's a great product, right? I want to say that outright. What they're talking about doing now is passporting their Spanish banking license into the Irish market and starting to offer deposit products, which means that customers who are frustrated with the low rates on offer from the incumbent, right? AIB, Bank of Ireland, Permanent TSB, we all know that what they're offering on deposits is quite low, okay? There's a lack of competition in the market since Ulster Bank and KBC left, and that has allowed them, among other factors, to keep the rates low on deposits, right? What they're proposing to do here, Bank Inter, is come in with a deposit product. They're not bringing loans, credit cards, full-scale banking services. It's essentially what Revolut, N26, and Bunk are already doing in the market. So I don't quite see how this is a full retail bank competitor.
Are we being resold something that we already have here?
I think what they've seen is they've tested the market with a very targeted niche mortgage product and have been successful. They're about to do the same with deposits, right?
Okay.
Will they recycle those deposits back into the Irish market in terms of mortgage products, or will they suck deposits out to support lending back in Spain?
Well, we haven't seen any deposit rates.
Haven't seen the rates. So just before I came on air, I looked up some rates. So the average retail deposit rate in Spain is about 3.15%. The average, this is long term, right? If you're locking your money away.
3 years plus.
Yeah, exactly. The average one here is about 2.59%. Okay. So between those two numbers, you could price something in the middle where you're going to take deposits away from the local competitors, but you're still going to be getting cheaper funding than you would from your depositors in Spain. So I'm just a little suspicious about what they're really up to here. Now, the bank has said, oh, somewhere down the line, we're going to apply for a full banking license. But they haven't committed to putting a banking headquarters here. They haven't committed to putting branches here or ATMs or anything like that.
But we've probably seen, as evidenced by the status quo, that branch banking infrastructure in towns is all on the retreat.
Yeah,
it is. I'll just say one more thing and then I'll leave the floor to everybody else. I'm thinking back to the summer of 2022 when AIB chief executive Colin Hunt announced that he'd be closing a load of branches and taking cash services away from about a third of their branch network. And he got a hammering from the finance minister, Michael McGrath, over that and was eventually forced to retreat. And the message coming out of the Department of Finance is that branch banking is what people want and it's what we support. That came out in the retail banking review. Now you have the same finance minister coming out praising a Spanish bank for saying they're going to open an online service for deposits. I just don't see those two things
but
as being coherent.
I think, though, the younger customer, you know, like we've had a very, you know, not a competitive banking, you know, arena here in Ireland, especially with what's happened in the last couple of years. So a lot of the younger customers, they don't mind about not having the visit and the wait and the queue and the in-branch banking. I think Revolut, N26 and now this bank, that online offering is going to suit a lot of customers and it's good for jobs and it's good for competition. Depending on what extent the offering is going to be, we wait and see. But like the fact that they're based in Carrick and Shannon and Dublin, but like 300 jobs to increase, I think that's good news for the economy as well.
Again, I'm hearing what John is saying. John, I'll also remind you that when KBC came into the market, they started off with a trail, with a whole infrastructure of branches, you know, and then they retreated out of the market. Mm. So it clearly didn't work for them.
Yeah, and the same is true, I guess, of Halifax, which was the first foreign bank to take off back in 2011, I think it was. So we don't have a great history here of sticky foreign banks, right? Yeah. That hang around for a long time. Look, I don't want anyone to think I don't want competition in the banking market. We're in a deplorable situation where we have about 2.5 banks in the country.
Sure.
Right? And it's not a great set of options for customers. And you can see it in the pricing, right? We're not getting great pricing at all from the banks.
Okay. We'll leave it there, but it is an interesting story. Let's see how it unfurls. As I say, the catalyst for me will be when we see what deposit interest they're offering. Then we'll make up our minds and we'll talk to you again about it then, John. Just stay with us on the banking story, because listeners are always interested to learn about the, you know, we had the bailout of Irish banks in 2011 that cost $21 billion. We've now seen the kind of state withdrawing out of these state banks as they were. And there's an interesting piece now in today's Independent that says the state is to earn 1.3 from AIB dividends and off-market sale of shares next week. But where are we, John, in the overall context of the $21 billion down? How much are we up?
Well, we're not up yet. We're still in a deficit situation. I did some calculations back in November, I think, after the last AIB share placement into the market. I think they put 5% of the state stake into the market, and that brought it close to $13 billion in total returns, right? So that's everything from the banking levy to coupons on cocoa bonds, you know, over the last decade or so.
Does that suggest then that there isn't going to be, the state will never recoup the losses of 2011?
That depends a little bit on share prices. At the current price, I think if the state was to cash in everything at once and the price didn't move, they'd get another $5 or $5.5 billion back, which would take them up to about $18 billion of total return after laying out $21 billion, right?
Okay.
So in the best case scenario, there's probably going to be a few billion of a deficit when all is said and done.
Okay,
right? And
very interesting.
Actually, I mean, the return on Bank of Ireland was much stronger. That was a bank that actually required less of a bailout, as you recall.
Yeah.
And as a result, the return was much stronger because it was just the institution was in better shape when the state took its stake and was able to sell out as a minority investor. But I don't want to downplay this. This is great news for the taxpayer to be getting over $1 billion back from this bank.
Well, I have to say that back in 2011, did we ever think we were going to see the colour of a return?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, even though we haven't, maybe we're not quids in yet, but it's a far better picture than
ever
expected.
Relative to expectations. And it has to be said that AIB just had a record year in terms of profitability. And a lot of that is coming back to the taxpayer, because the taxpayer at the moment is a 39% shareholder. That'll come down to about 31% after this series of transactions. But we're still in there with a large stake and due to collect very significant dividends over the coming years.
Okay. Caroline, interesting week for Microsoft, Alphabet, show AI investment bets are paying off. And then in the Examiner, we see a week of relief for Google, but AI products fall short for rivals. So
yeah,
AI is definitely where it's at, but I suppose it depends on who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose Google obviously own the Alphabet piece. They're all in it together. The OpenAI piece with ChatGPT, you know, that whole shareholding has really paid off, I suppose. And shares in Google up 10%, which is really significant. And they're putting that down to the AI products that they're involved in. I suppose on the flip side, then we're seeing Meta having a bad week where the shares are down 10% and it wiped $170 billion. Like, what a huge impact. And the same with Intel. So as you say, it depends on where you're at right now with your AI, but it just shows that the investment in AI is really impacting these banks. But let's think about it. There's new AI legislation coming in Europe, just in, and more coming in the US, because the impact now of AI in every business and in every person and what they're doing is so significant. So I think it's one to watch, isn't it? For sure.
Yeah.
We're going to see a lot more on this.
One of the things, if we look at the numbers here, John, they're colossal in terms of share price. We're talking trillions in terms of valuations. Like, the numbers are so big that, you know, any kind of, I suppose, wobble in the share price is significant.
Yeah, and if you look at the performance of the U.S. stock market over the last year, it's these companies that are driving most of the so-called Magnificent Seven, you know, the companies that are exposed to artificial intelligence are driving an incredible rally in U.S. stock markets. I mean, it's come off a little bit in the last month or so, but returns over the last year have been very, very strong. A couple of things I want to point out here that's really interesting is the sort of resurgence of Microsoft as a major player in tech. Now, they've always had the scale, but they were seen as a little bit old-fashioned, you know, after the arrival of the social media companies and so forth. They've had a real comeback, and they're at the forefront of this AI stuff through their partnership with OpenAI. And then also, on the other hand, Meta actually has taken stumble after stumble, right? They went down a blind alley with virtual reality, and they seem to be at the back of the pack now in terms of developing AI products. So their shares have been, you know, taken a hit. Investors aren't happy with the direction that they're going. And it looks like Mark Zuckerberg is going to have to sort of figure out how to make this work for that company, because, you know, social media is probably going to struggle a little bit now. It's like a lot of regulatory scrutiny looking at, you know, TikTok as maybe a kind of canary in the coal mine there for government tolerance for the conduct of social media companies. So AI is a really important development for Meta, but they don't seem to be getting it just yet.
Very interesting. And it just, again, shows you that with any business, things are changing all the time, and it's how you react to that change. Caroline, interesting piece in the Indo today, telling us, I think, something we already probably know, that we need to build up rather than out to solve the housing crisis and to rejuvenate the cities. What did you make of this, please, particularly that survey that basically put us well down the list of a quality place to live internationally, which I think is concerning.
Absolutely. Richard Curran has done a really good piece in today's Indo. And this survey is, it's an international survey of 188 countries. And basically, it's saying our attractiveness has fallen four places to 36th in the world. And I suppose 10 years ago, we were 19th. And a big part of that they're attributing to housing. But again, when you look at 10 years ago, an average house in Dublin was 265,000. Today it's 433. And rent similarly, 1,200 gone up to 2,100. Yeah. So like that's very significant.
And the other point around the 10 years ago is that the unemployment rate here was 13%.
Absolutely.
Like it's really, when I look at all those figures together, I had to do it. Yeah. A second take and say, wow.
Yeah. And I suppose ultimately we all know, look, more affordable houses is what is needed. But the supply and demand, like, I definitely think more high rise in a managed way is right. We don't want it to be something that becomes, you know, an issue for antisocial and for other issues. But without, you know, without doubt, we've seen in one scenario in Dublin where the height restrictions were lifted that they could have 12 floors, and that increased the number of units from 400 to 600. So that's 200 new homes.
Yeah.
But I suppose culturally in Ireland, everybody talks about a home being an actual house rather than, you know, an apartment.
I think that's changing.
I do too. And I think it needs to change more and more. And I think his parting comments at the end of this article of build them and they will come, I think is really the case.
John, you're an American. Mm. You've seen lots of high-rise cities where it seems to work perfectly well, where they take an area of downtown and you build as high effectively as you want. What are your thoughts?
You see both kinds of cities in the States, right? You have very car-centric ones like Los Angeles or Dallas that are very spread out, and then much denser cities like New York, Chicago, and Philadelphia. But we don't even have to look at the States, you know, to see successful density. You can look at Barcelona, Paris, Naples. Those are the three most densely populated cities in Europe. Everybody loves visiting them.
Yeah.
Why is that? Right. So they have a density of not just residents, but density of activity. They can afford to put in good public transportation, all have very good metro systems. I took a visit to Barcelona recently. It's definitely packed. You feel like you're
it's a great city.
In a big city with a lot of activity going around. Right. But what I found kind of amazing is that the sort of density of residences means that you can have a diversity of shops, all kinds of different things that, you know, you're seeing less and less of in the Dublin urban environment, where you're seeing more chain stores. You're not seeing as much in terms of, you know, new businesses starting out in retail spaces. We have a lot of vacant retail. It's a very strange sort of situation in Dublin. Now, the focus on kind of big towers like Johnny Ronan wants his 19 stories and so forth, like that's always going to be contested, I think, in the planning system. But we can definitely fill in a lot more empty space around this city with sort of 6 to 8 stories and add a lot more residential units as a result, rather than sprawling into lovely rural counties like Darren Wicklow, right?
Or even Kerry, which we're going to talk about next, because we have a Kerry woman here reviewing our stories. And I bring you to page 16 of today's Independent, Caroline. From idyllic peaks to the magic of rare sea life, National Park showcases the kingdom at its best. What's this all about?
So this is a really good news story, not alone for tourists, but also for the economy in the kingdom. And I suppose basically what they're doing is they're taking what is there already in terms of the heritage, the wildlife, the natural beauty around Mount Brandon, Caher Daniel, Inch Dingle, etc. And they're packaging it. It's 70,000 acres, so it's a huge opportunity to be the eighth. It's the eighth largest park, but it's now going to be the first maritime park in Ireland. And this national park, I think, is going to be a really big destination. Park Náisiúnta na Mara, it's going to be called. And it's going to be a really brilliant opportunity, I think, for showcasing what is beautiful in Kerry.
And it's a good example where, like the Wild Atlantic Way, where you consider your assets, which are these wonderful tourist assets.
Absolutely.
Well, not just tourists, but infrastructural assets.
Absolutely.
And you package them in a way that links them together, be it the Blasket Islands, the Skelligs, Inch Beach, all magnificent places.
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen the success of the Wild Atlantic Way, and recently even in the stats where they've been telling us, you know, how successful that was. This is there already. And I think anybody, if they haven't their holiday plans locked in this year, it's definitely worth. I mean, I've climbed Mount Brandon. I mean, Connor Pass is stunning in its own right. Caher Daniel, Valentia Island, the Blaskets. If you're lucky enough to get to do this, I think you've a sunny day.
Spoken like a true Kerry woman.
It's absolutely magic, in fairness.
Now, John, last word to you, and I want to talk Kattenburg. It's Kattenburg. And I'm sorry this isn't video, it's just radio, but there's a wonderful story in page 28 of today's Mail. Check out the feline that thinks it's a cake. Tell our listeners more if you would.
Well, Bobby, thank you for giving me the cat story. I really appreciate it. So this is a cat that, when you're looking at it, actually has a sort of a checkerboard pattern in its fur. So you're kind of looking at it dead on, and it's sort of dark on one side of its face and light on the other. But then opposite down its kind of forelegs there.
It's a Battenberg.
It's like a Battenberg cake, right? And this cat has quite an extensive following on Instagram.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
With 1.8 million likes on TikTok and 60,000 followers on Instagram, which is far more popular than I've ever been on social media.
Yeah.
Well, now that you're talking about it, who knows? Big thanks to my guests, John Isle, and indeed Caroline Reedy. Thank you for a great review of the business stories.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.